Well, hello, Vashon. This is Dove Speaks with Chris Austin and I almost said Annalie Foat again. My other show. Sorry about that. It's Betsy Archambault.
Hello.
The executive director of the Dove Project, and you have brought guests.
I have. Would you gentlemen like to introduce yourselves?
In alphabetical order.
In alphabetical order. So, Kyle.
That would be me. Hello. Kyle Britz. A Dove advocate, prevention specialist.
Okay.
And I'm Tim Holly, and I'm a volunteer with Dove.
All right. Well, welcome. Thank you so much for being here with us today, guys.
And why, pray tell, are they here?
Well, funny you should ask. They are here with us today to talk about men in the domestic violence sexual assault movement.
Mm-hmm.
We thought it might be helpful to really kind of structure what that looks like so people know what we're talking about when we're talking about the movement.
Sure.
Okay. So the domestic violence movement developed over the past several decades, and it has changed the way that we think about violence in the home. Okay. So the domestic violence movement understands that abuse is not an individual woman's problem, but a social problem. The movement understands that institutions of our culture reinforce the idea that violence within intimate relationships is acceptable and, at the same time, blames women for being victims of domestic violence. And so all of this started to come about civil rights and anti-war movements in the 1950s and 1960s started challenging the country and really laid the foundation for the feminist movement, right? And then as women gained more ground and more voice and agency in the 70s, spousal abuse then became a public issue. And so initially this was actually called the battered women's movement. And today we don't usually use those terms, battered women's movement or battered women. Sorry, I'm stumbling there. So that's what we're talking about today. And so everyone that works within domestic violence and sexual assault is, in fact, part of the movement.
Well, I think part of it is when you say battered woman, it's that kind of really confines it to one gender, and which isn't the case. I mean, domestic violence can work either way, can work between same-sex couples. And what I have, before I got on the board with the Dove Project, I think I thought about domestic violence like the general public. You know, it's a bad thing and needs to be something done about it, blah, blah. But what's kind of my eyes have opened is the breadth of it, that it isn't just, you know, the guy in the wife beater t-shirt that's abusing his wife. It's domestic violence among intimate partners and maybe even bigger than that, it's family members, it's siblings, parent to child. So it's just this big constellation of problems, really.
Well, it is. And, you know, and on the flip side, we also have to understand that men and boys are affected by violence and abuse in more ways than one. They also can be sexually and physically abused and assaulted. Right. Mm-hmm. Men are witnesses and bystanders to violence. And yes, and sometimes they're perpetrators. But engaging men in the movement to address and prevent and end domestic violence and sexual assault is absolutely critical.
Right. You know, we need people to realize this is everyone's problem. It's like, well, I don't beat anybody, so what's the big deal? You know, I don't abuse anybody. But it is a big deal because the lessons that you can impart to somebody that's even a casual acquaintance has a ripple effect. And I'm sure these gentlemen can speak to that better than I can.
Yes, absolutely. So, Kyle, what made you decide to be part of the movement and get involved locally with the kind of interpersonal violence and prevention?
Well, I think like elements that y'all just expressed right now too, like it's not just a one box scenario. Like people find themselves presenting in power and control dynamics in various different levels, and people find themselves needing assistance or help to be able to get out of these situations. And I find myself trying to reconcile with these social norms that didn't seem proper, and people weren't getting the help that they needed. I know I wasn't getting the help that I needed at a time. And I know people that I know on the island, in the community, and even abroad, haven't gotten help that they needed. So I started sorting out other agencies that were really here stepping up for people, trying to address people's concerns and hearing them when they had issues that they couldn't necessarily even define, because the power and control isn't just physical violence. It can be long-term manipulation, a lot of emotional violence. And then sometimes people don't know how to step up and step in to be supportive as a bystander.
Right, because then people feel like, oh, well, am I really misreading this situation? Am I going to make some sort of huge blunder? You know, is it even appropriate for me to say this? Will I ruin a friendship? Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. It's very complicated, the whole thing.
So. And then further highlighting, you know, just like it was, of course, acknowledged as a women's issue for a long time. And I have a lot of women in my life. I have a lot of sisters, you know, my mother's a mom. So like, and I guess I have extra moms too, through marriages. And yeah, and recognizing that there are a lot of issues for a lot of these people that they've experienced, and just other extended community members all have different stories for different aspects. And it's good to step up when we can.
Absolutely. Tim, what about you? What made you decide to get involved with all of this?
So I am a survivor of domestic violence with my live-in girlfriend when I was in college. So I know firsthand that it can happen to men also. It was hard to talk about it for a long time because it's a kind of vulnerability, and we're raised to not be vulnerable in this kind of way. It took a lot of healing to get through all that. But years ago I did, and it developed in me a passion to give back and to help other people who are in situations where they don't feel safe or where they aren't safe. Getting involved with Dove, I've learned that some people tend to be more vulnerable than others in those situations, like when there's kids involved or when there's financial domination and control involved. So it's made me appreciate helping the people who are most vulnerable, whoever that is. So we're at Dove, we're available for anybody who wants to come in and discuss domestic violence kind of situation in their lives, whether it's men or women, or since gender is non-binary now, it could be people in any situation. But in particular, I've developed a sensitivity to people who are especially vulnerable and don't have other places to turn.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Chris, what about you? You're a man in the movement.
Why did I get involved? Because Mary Maron made me?
Wrong answer.
No, you know, she's the one that approached me about becoming a board member, and really hadn't thought about it. And frankly, it'd probably be going along the same track if she hadn't approached me. But it really did open my eyes to a lot of stuff, and in my personal life as well as just what's around me. And, you know, the longer I've been in the group, like we mentioned, the Battered Women's Program or movement back when, and you think about it, back in the old days, or how it was kind of characterized in the old TV shows, if a woman was abused by her husband, she'd just go to her girlfriends. There was no support system. There was no agency. There was never a man in that scenario that would help, the situation. And that's just not right. So I just feel it's an important movement, and so that's why I got involved. And you?
Well, I don't actually consider myself a man in the movement.
Oh, okay, well. Okay, get me on a technicality.
First, thank you for sharing why you decided to join the movement. It's very personal for many, many people, and it takes a lot of bravery and courage to talk about this stuff. And for me, when I look at domestic violence, I really see how it impacts all of the different other facets of people's lives, right? It's not just people don't come to us and they say, I'm here because of domestic violence and I have no, and this does not bleed over into any other part mm-hmm. of my life, right? It really affects your, you know, medical agency, your financial agency, what happens with your children, your housing security, right? Food security, mental health. Am I missing any? I mean, it's so intersectional mm-hmm. that it's almost impossible to pull it out. And so it's interesting to me when people say, oh, that's not my issue. Mm-hmm. And you think, okay, well, the thing is that it's a huge ball and right. it's really hard to say that's not my issue, because then you're almost saying, well, you know, all of these other things aren't my issue either. And in fact, you know, I believe that we all have values around uplifting humans and being caring, right? And supporting people's dignity. And so I don't know if I'm being clear, but for me, well, that's what happens.
Well, you might look at it the other way and say, what good can come from ignoring the problem or not addressing the problem? Nothing.
Right.
I mean, it's only going to be a drag, a detriment to families and who those families are connected to, which is everyone. You know, mm-hmm. that's the fabric of society. So just turning a blind eye and saying, well, that's not me. That's not my socioeconomic group. I'm not really that concerned.
Right. Those aren't my peeps.
Yeah. And as you've said on the show before, it isn't isolated to one socioeconomic group. It's all of them. Some of them hide it better, but mm-hmm. it's everybody.
Yeah. You know the HBO series, Big Little Lies? Have you heard of that?
I've heard of it. I haven't seen it.
Yeah. It's with Nicole Kidman. Isn't that right? Nicole Kidman?
I haven't seen it.
Okay.
I'll put it on the list.
I don't have HBO, but I think so.
She is in it, yes.
There was a story that was put out recently on this about how it really kind of highlights more nuanced domestic violence, right? Mm-hmm. Because people do expect it to be right there. You can't miss it. And so apparently there's been a thread of this, of nuanced power and control within Big Little Lies. And in fact, Big Little Lies producers were working with domestic violence agencies to make sure that they got this nuance right. And I think that's really interesting and that's really powerful, because then this is actually, you know, something that comes out very publicly and lots of people watch it. Lots of people.
Well, I that's probably why they watch it. That nuance that makes it an intriguing show. That, yeah, that's, I've seen that, or I am in that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the big, you know, throw across the room in a drunken rage kind of thing. It's that everyday kind of demeaning or berating or financial beatdown, that it's being pecked to death by a thousand ducks. It's
yeah.
Yeah.
And people may either not see themselves as being in a domestic violence situation or not want to see it that way.
Oh, I
when you see it portrayed in a character, it could be easier to see what's going on without having
right.
to expose yourself.
You're out of that experience and you're the fly on the wall. Goes, oh, that's, you know, uncomfortably close to where I am.
And as a society, I think a language is something we're still coming into consciousness with. There are a lot of words that people are just coming to realize what they might mean, just as actions are coming to realize like what they're presenting themselves as. So it's helpful for us to get an idea of what it is that we're experiencing, or to help define it, to have conversations with others so then we can be assistive for that.
Absolutely. Now let me just take a break here. We want to thank some people for their support of the show.
All right. Well, thank you so much to the Dental Care of Vashon. VOV support is provided by Dental Care of Vashon. Whether you're suffering from tooth or gum discomfort, damaged or missing teeth, sleep issues, or are in need of crowns or dental implants, Dr. Demova and her team at Dental Care of Vashon will bring you relief and renewed confidence in a comfortable, caring environment. So you can give them a call at 206-463-9115 or visit them online at dentalcareofvashon.com.
And we'd also like the founding underwriters for KBSH, John L. Scott, best people, best results.
You can help Voice of Vashon find the island's very own Adele or Justin. Come to VOV's first annual singing contest, The Voice of Vashon, Saturday, April 1 at Open Space for Arts and Community. 24 Islanders made it into the competition in two age categories, 15 to 24 and 25 and older. Four celebrity judges, Ian Moore, Star Anna, V. Contreras, and Martin Fevrier, will select finalists in each category. Then you, the audience, will select the winners. It's sure to be a nail-biter, and you'll want to be there to support your favorite singer. Winners get the soon-to-be-coveted golden microphone, a First Friday Live on the Highway gig, and the opening acts at KVSH's October Birthday Bash. Doors open at 5 p.m. April 1. The singers start performing at 6. There'll be food, games, snacks, adult and kid beverages, and lots of excitement. Get your tickets now at brownpapertickets.com or at the Vashon Bookshop.
So
help us find the Voice of Vashon. So hail from the other side.
So in regard to men in the movement, one thing that I wanted to bring up is the issue of privilege, because so men in this society have higher privilege than women do. I mean, various factors make some of us more privileged, just in a position where we're regarded with more status for reasons that aren't even, that we don't even control. We were just born that way.
Right.
And one thing about social change movements is it's important to leverage whatever privilege you have toward the good of all as part of that movement. And so to me, as part of the domestic violence prevention movement, it's really important that we have men get involved and use that privilege, you know, toward helping everyone. Even if I personally might not be in that situation, I know people who are, because we know, if you went through the numbers, I know you have on past shows, this happens to more people than we think. And so people we know are going through it. And so to use whatever leverage we have to help other people.
Well, you know, domestic violence is such that the perpetrator and the victim both want it to be quiet in many cases. And that's why it goes so underreported, and it's a shame. It's not like a robbery, where if I get robbed, I want everybody to know about it.
Right. Well, violence thrives in silence, and yeah. But Tim, really, really good point. And I think that one of the things that you're saying is that people have talked about this in politics recently, but I also think it's really valid here about representation matters. And so when men show up, literally and figuratively, in the movement for, you know, prevention or support, it really breaks down barriers to other men and also to the younger generation who is looking and learning, taking this all in. And if seeing men standing there, I mean, being there, part of this, then that's what's going to be normal for them. And that's culture change.
Yeah. Like at the Women's March recently, where I saw so many men there as allies for the women there. And it's interesting what it is to be an ally, because you're not, well, what we're doing at Dove is an empowerment model, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's about being there for somebody to create their own change in their lives and being available to help in ways that that person, the survivor, is dictating. And so in the same way at the Women's March, I thought it was really interesting the way men were kind of finding ways to be with women there, but without taking over in any way. Mm-hmm. Without that women don't even need help, that it's more just they would like to have men standing by their sides and, like you're saying, show up.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Kyle, what are your thoughts?
I mean, I think we're all in this together. Like, I mean, I think men make up 48% of humanity. So it's like, you know, 60, 40, 50, 50. So I feel that this showing up is important to our any relationship that we have, any relationship that I have, any relationship that the people I know have. And it's important to keep this in the forefront and the awareness, because it is helping people's wellness and public health, our any of our relationships that we have. It's assistive to be present and be acknowledging of that, because it's every relationship. And this, some of the stuff like in politics, we've been talking a lot about like racism, but sexism is this inherit, like is in, inherited, and we've been culturally programmed a lot of things that we're not necessarily even conscious of. And it's something I have to do self checks with all the time, whether they're gender binary or not, but there's these preclusions that I have to constantly self-check myself. And sometimes jokes, I find myself saying them or hearing them, and they can really make people feel uncomfortable or start exuding that power and control. And that's where those nuances really start playing a part, like recognizing where people's comfort levels are or how they might be triggering people from other experiences.
You know, if you think about a man in the movement, and if he can set an example to someone else, a young person, and you know that man in the movement may have a daughter, and she's going to grow up, and she's going to get married, and hopefully that person will have been educated or exposed to, you know, the way he wants his daughter treated.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, maybe he's have a son too, and the son needs the education as well for themselves, for knowing what kind of relationship they want.
Exactly. So when men are in these movements, and other men on the outside and boys can see that and say, okay, that's an okay thing to do. That's cool. You're not a sissy if you support a woman's cause, or, you know, what are the caveman mentality.
Right. So Kyle and Tim, both of you also work in prevention with youth here on the island. And so what does that look like, or what does that feel like? What's exciting about that for you?
It's exciting having real conversations with folks that are growing up, and like they're becoming aware of their world, and they have questions and they have feelings, and they're checking in with their own gut reaction to some role models that they've seen in TV and media. And it's been great working with the Teen Council, working directly with teens recently within the schools, to be able to address and have an opportunity to have these conversations. And I'm already seeing the ripple effect of that, and how people just seem more comfortable too. And both boys and girls, and boys feel more comfortable coming forward to address issues before they might become more serious. So that prevention piece, that intersection can happen anytime, and it's okay for us to come forward and ask questions. Everybody has issues with any relationship that they have, like whether it's an intimate relationship or even a social friend relationship. And there's some great programs for sportsmanship as well that Tim, I believe, is starting to work on, as well as his other lunch programs.
So, yeah, one of the things I'm really excited about is in the fall, we're hoping to pilot on the island a program called Coaching Boys into Men, which is about working with coaches of male athletes at either a high school or college level. In our case, we would hopefully do it at the high school. And it's over a 10-week period. It's having these coaches talk to their athletes for 15 minutes once a week about having respect for girls and women in their lives. And so it's a small amount regularly applied that models, because the assumption is that the coaches are role models for the
athletes.
Absolutely.
I think it's a great idea.
Yeah.
I mean, how many, you know, especially if you've got a single mother, and here's a, you know, kind of a father figure in your life.
Exactly.
What a great idea.
Yeah. And then the assumption is that the athletes are have status within their communities.
Sure.
And so then it ripples out there. Yeah. And so we would be support systems for these coaches. And at Garfield in Seattle, they've actually rolled this out to all the coaches in their school. Last year, they did it where they paid the coaches to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, they've made it mandatory where they just all do it.
That's kind of cool.
It's really cool. And it's right here. I mean, it's right in Seattle, so we have access to them as mentors for us.
Yeah, well, that's great, because I think the coaches would probably need some help in this, because it's probably not in their playbook, so to speak.
Right. Right, but I mean, the way that the curriculum is set out, it almost tells you word for word what to say, and so we're not asking for people to learn every single part
sure,
of this.
Sure.
We give the little bite-sized piece every week.
Great idea.
But Chris, that's a really good point too, is it opens up conversations like outside, like this is a prescribed conversation that they're having off these cards, but then it's going to open up emotional things coming up for the athletes that they might talk about the coaches with separately from this. So mm-hmm. It kind of opens them to having new types of conversations with the athletes.
And then the coaches would have access to you guys to say, okay, that's a little bit out of my wheelhouse, what you're discussing. It's important. So let me give you to Kyle, or have Kyle come in and the three of us can talk about this,
yep.
or Tim or whomever.
And then they give regular progress reports so mm-hmm. that the prevention specialist people have input on how the program's working and how they might help or tweak it.
Yeah, measurement, evaluation, mm-hmm. make sure that we can make it better by what we're learning.
Yeah, and potentially have that be part of a study for like a larger term study on the efficacy of it.
Absolutely.
You know, and I think singling out the athletes is a good idea, just because, you know, they're typically the most physically imposing in the school and looked up to in many regards. And so if they're espousing what the coach is saying, then that has a ripple effect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Tim, were you saying with Title IX, they also have a program for the girls' sports teams as well?
Yeah, so because of Title IX, as many of us know, every time that there's a boys program like this, there needs to be an equivalent girls program or equivalent money put into a girls program. And so at Garfield, they've created and are piloting a girls program for girl athletes, female athletes, called SLAY. Mm-hmm. And I think they're in their first year of piloting that. They're trying it out, and they're going to put it together into a product that will be available at some point in the coming months. They say June or July, but it's worth keeping up with Rebecca Milliman with Harborview.
Yeah, with Harborview. Yeah.
You can get on her mailing list potentially, and then she'll let people know when the SLAY program's available for us to roll it out. Because ideally what we want to do is have some of our sports teams do each of those programs in the fall. So we can start with kind of a small sample mm-hmm. of teams and then see how it works and refine it and potentially go larger in coming years.
Absolutely. Quickly, Tim, can you just talk about how you feel things are going with lunch dates with Dove at the middle school as a male prevention figure?
Sure. I mean, it's kind of a big subject.
You have a minute and a half?
Oh, sure. That's plenty. Good. So for the last 2 years, we've been going into the middle school at lunchtimes for 10 weeks in a row for each set of modules and talking to the kids about healthy relationships, about equity, so human rights and treating people with fairness. And this current module is about bystander intervention, about how to make our community safer by acting when we see a dangerous situation.
And I mean, what do you think? Do you see that the teens are learning, are referencing the previous modules?
Yes.
Yeah.
Since you mentioned that. It's been really exciting. We call it like a bite-sized learning opportunities, because we have each kid for about 1 minute each. We get a big mob of kids who come up to our booth, and they seem to really engage in what the question is each week. And then, like you're saying, from week to week, they reference back previous subjects that we've talked about. Like if we're talking about privilege, they'll say, oh, that relates to the stereotypes we were talking about last week.
Mm. Our kids.
Yeah, they really get it. It's been exciting to do.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Tim. Thank you, Kyle, for joining us today. I hope you'll come back with us again someday to continue chatting, because, I mean, these are all huge subjects. And I also think that, I mean, more and more men are joining the movement, and every single day there are new super cool prevention initiatives that are coming out. And I think it's because there's so much more visibility here. So thank you, everyone, for listening today. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you very much. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you, Betsy. And can you give us a little hint of what's next week?
I can, absolutely. So next week, you will be hearing from Dove's lead advocate, Nin, and she's going to be talking about Green Dot Bystander Intervention Training.
Very good stuff. Okay, well, everyone have a great week, and we'll see you next week.
All right. Bye-bye.